All right, let's see if you can hear us, me good. Thanks for having me here. It's good to be traveling again. Having said that, it's snowing outside, and last week I was in Jamaica. Okay, so this is not cool, guys. It's a bit cold for me right now, but you know, it's at least good to be back on track here. So this is this, I got that. Before I go actually into datacastic discussion, there were a couple of questions out there over the last couple of days in regards of, you know, and how do I switch over into the ATSC3 environment. One option which we have not talked about or nobody mentioned is, if you have access or if you can work with a low power TV station, you can actually switch over without anything from the FCC. I mean, you have to file, of course. But you can switch over that low power TV station at any moment after you file, so you don't have to do channel share or any of these kind of things. So if you have access, if you know anybody who has a low power TV station, if you want to buy one, you know, that's up to you all. So they're not that expensive. They're also not that cheap. So, but that's definitely an option. So if you have a low power friend, that might be an option out there. So we're going to talk about data casting, and you know, we talked over lunch about that. So what is data casting actually? Because ATSC 3.0 is everything is data. So what are you talking about, Ralph? It's all data. So data casting, and I'm going to go into that, is you know, just like it was in the olden time for ATSC 1.0, data delivery over a transport stream, so to speak. So I'm going to talk about that. Let's see if I can go back and forth here. Hang on. There you go. So that's just a high-level diagram of an ATSC3 station. It's just block diagram, high-level. I have not included the ATSC 1.0 aspects in here to make it more simpler. Otherwise, you have basically double the blocks or something like that. But this is a high-level network diagram of how an ATSC3 station looks like from, you know, the left-hand side, where you have your encoders, you hit you know, a transport encoder, a broadcast gateway or a scheduler, exciter, transmission, you know, and then receiver ends. So, you know, and actually, I'm really fortunate I have some really good speakers in front of me, so I don't have to go over a lot of details here in regards to what all these functions are doing. So I can really just focus on the data casting environment. So if you look at the green items on the middle box, I don't have a pointer, I think. If you look at those, that's basically, you know, your basic ATSC3 delivery. And Jason was talking about MMT, that's an option, or route is the other option. So all your audio video is going to be basically multiplexed in there and then pushed out to the broadcast gateway. Also, the reason why I'm bringing that up on a high level perspective is your broadcaster application, if you have such a thing or planning to have such a thing, will be also pushed through that area. So that's already kind of like a data environment where you push an information or an application through the broadcast chain to the receiver, where the receiver then opens up that broadcaster application and is displayed on a TV or the set-top box. So your broadcast application is kind of a generic, you know, environment which goes to all of the receivers, and it's all standard space. So when I start talking about data casting, I normally talk about private data, not public data. And that's on that slide is basically, if I go back here, kind of that area or function of, in our product, the Guide Builder, or you know, whatever other vendors are calling it. That's our NRT engine. And that NRT engine is basically taking private data, you know, such as, you know, educational information from schools, first responders, these kind of things, or whatever you can think of, and then puts that into the format of ATSC 3.0. And actually, we had a discussion over lunch as well. There's two ways to put that into the ATSC 3 stream. One, you can put this also in the routing coder, and then, you know, that pushes it out. But you technically can also go straight into the scheduler, so you can bypass that function as well. So there's multiple pluses and minuses, which we could talk about as well. Jason actually was, I have a slide about that, but Jason was talking about application layer FEC. So that's where you basically add the application layer FEC for large file delivery, right? And he explains it much better than me. He's much more technical than me. Thanks, Jason. So if you have that delivery, right, you want to make sure all the packets arrive and they come in time. So that at that point, you enable the application FEC, which you shouldn't misunderstand that with the FEC on the STLTP, for example. There's multiple FECs in the ATSC3 environment, one on the transmission side and one on the application side, hence the application FEC. So that's where you can apply the application layer FEC. You don't have to, but you can. Advantages is, you know, if it's a large file, it probably makes it to your receiver, but you also have to give up bandwidth. So that's normally kind of the give and take, as Jason was talking about as well. So you have pluses and minuses there. One of the interesting things, there was one question earlier this morning about, you know, how many HDs and stuff like that can I put into an ATSC3 environment? That, of course, you know, I put my marketing hat on and say, depends. So it depends on what kind of programs you have, you know, how many HDs, how many 4Ks, you know, how many, you know, DigiNets, and how many programs you have. But the reason why I'm bringing this up, it also depends what kind of additional services you want to provide in your ATSC3 environment, meaning data casting, right? So the minute you put data casting or a data application into the stream, that will use bandwidth, right? So it's not a freebie, but you know, it really depends what you do. So, but the reason why I'm bringing this up, there's really interesting concepts now out there, and we actually have that deployed in certain areas where you can do bandwidth optimization techniques, like for example with Harmonic, and I'm not sure if my Harmonic friend will talk about that, but you can do statistical multiplexing, right? So you just like in the olden days in 1.0, you had statistical multiplexing that applies also to 3.0. So what you can do with statistical multiplexing is smoothen out your content, and then you have a more deterministic bandwidth available for you for data casting. So these kind of techniques are implemented to optimize the bandwidth utilization for you, especially when you do channel sharing, right? Because you have a lot of programs at that point. And then the rest is, you know, scheduled delivering. We can deliver this over broadcast and broadband. Actually, that's another question which was this morning. You know, what does this do? What can I do with ATSC3 for the end user or me at home, right? So one of the things I'm looking forward to, I'm not in an ATSC3 market, so I'm going to cry, but soccer, or football as I call it, is coming up end of the year, right? So I want to watch Switzerland play, you know, the US. But I would like to listen to my commentator in Swiss, preferable, not in English. So, of course, you as a broadcaster don't want to have, you know, 100 languages transmitting over your infrastructure because it's too much bandwidth. What you want to do is you want to signal, okay, for the people who want to have Swiss language commentators, you put that over the broadband infrastructure, and my TV then goes, fetches it from the internet, and I hear the audio for the audio I want to hear. So these are kind of the application me as an end user love to see, right? Because I, you know, and you can put that in any kind of environment for any sports, right? NASCAR, I want to see, you know, that commentator, or football. I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, don't judge me. I have problems, I know. But I sometimes want to listen to the audio from the stadium there, right? I don't want to listen to Fox, you know, commentators, right? ESPN commentators. So you can augment your content, right? With content actually people want to listen to. The Switzerland one was probably not a good idea because I'm only one person here in the US, Swiss or something like that. So the target market is small. So anyway. There's multiple ways you can get all that data. I'm not going to go through that list, and I think we're going to give out these slides anyway. So there's multiple ways how to get to that data and how you're going to provide that data to our infrastructure. So we talked about kind of the transmitter side or the transmission side. But what's really important is you have to have something on the receiving side as well, right? And what that means is, you know, whatever I send, my receiver has to understand. And for example, I talked earlier in the talk about broadcast applications. So a broadcast application, every receiver will understand because it's in the standard, right? So if I send that broadcast application, the TV knows what to do. It decodes it, it puts it on the screen, and does what it needs to do. So for private data, going back to that topic, if the first responder application, I don't really want to have the TV pick that up, right? Because it's not for the end user, maybe it's just for a first responder. So what I'm showing here is there has to be receiver entities or receiver products out there who understand what to pick up from a protocol stack perspective. And this is just some kind of a list, and it's a growing list. At least from a Triveni perspective, we're trying to integrate with, you know, I normally say Triveni guys are basically the plumber in ATSC 3.0. We take stuff out and push it stuff out as well. So we're basically a plumber. So we try to work with on both ends with all the manufacturers. So the list of receiver options are I'm actually growing. And I have a couple more slides about receivers later on. But these are just some samples here. Probably not going too much. I don't sure if you guys can see that properly. It might be a bit of an eye chart. And the point here on that particular slide is as follows. On the left-hand side, the blue aspect, I'm colorblind, I hope it's blue. The blue side is basically your regular delivery of ATSC 3.0, your audio, your video, these kind of things. And you see, you know, on the bottom where you have the link layers and the tuners. So all the bootstrap of the ATSC 3 protocol is the same if it's a private data or regular ATSC 3 delivery. But then you have a different kind of signaling environment. So if you go to the private data section, which is the red area, it's a little bit different. As you see, there's probably, for example, no SLS in there. So if you have an analyzer and you don't see a SLS, but there's bandwidth use, there's probably somebody using private data. So there's a little bit of a difference as well. And then maybe also to go to Jason's presentation, the minute you do such a private data environment, you actually have to use per standard route NRT. You probably could do it in an MMT, but it's not per standard. So, but you know, we have proven we can do it, but per standard you should use route in that environment. So hence you only really see route on that end. But that's kind of the high level point of this particular slide. And again, I wish I had Jason up here. He can explain this much better than I do. This is application layer FEC and not transmission FEC. So you have multiple dials here in an ATSC 3 environment. So that the on the RF side or the transmission side, the FEC is kind of done by the scheduler, and you can do that based on modcards. And if you want to know what modcards are and what kind of options you have, you can talk to Mike from Heartland. He's the modcard specialist here. He knows all modcards and options and probably can help you calculate those as well. But so on the application side, again, if you have larger files, you probably want to implement an application layer FEC, and what we have implemented is a Raptor Q, and I think Jason also mentioned that Raptor Q in environment, and it's not really our software; it just integrated that into the product, so it's easier for you to just, you know, apply the FEC if you like to do so, and you know, these are just samples how it replaces some of the bits in there, you know, in regards of a single byte missing or a burst is missing in that one. So that's kind of the Raptor Q option. And a lot of people actually forget about that because when they hear about FEC, they don't think there's an application layer FEC. But keep in mind, you know, the more FEC you apply, the lesser bandwidth you get. It's always, you know, you win some, you lose some. And this is kind of just a picture of how this kind of looks like in our user interface in the guide builder for private data. I wish I actually had a better picture of that. I'm probably going to send you a better one as well down the road. The reason why I'm saying that, it's very constant, right? It looks like a CBR here on the bottom. And the data normally is not constant either, right? So I have a customer who... we also talked about lunch about that. I have a customer who is focusing on data casting 100% or 99% ARC multicast. And what they do is they can give a customer who's interested in transmitting a large amount of files to many people, you know, multicast and data casting, they can give them a user interface and say, hey, this is kind of your bandwidth you have purchased from us, and you can live in that limit, right? So they can send, you know, between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. I send a little bit more, and between, you know, 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. I don't say much at all. So it's not really a CBR. So that can be very variable in regards of bandwidth utilization. But again, the plus on that one is if you implement a statistical multiplexing, maybe together with harmonic, right? You can then optimize your bandwidth. At 8 o'clock, I don't use a lot of bandwidth for data, but I'm watching a football game and I want that in 4K. So you can kind of offset that kind of environment in regards of data utilization. So it's not a super good picture, but I think it makes a point there as well. Receiver options. We talked a little bit about TVs this morning. Some folks talked about TVs. For example, I just come again from Jamaica, right? They switch actually from analog to digital. They don't even have ATSC 1.0. Just making that point as well. So they need quote unquote I call it a DTA, which is not not necessarily the quite right word either, but they need a really low cost DTA for existing TVs where they receive ATSC 3.0 HDMI into the TV and that's pretty much it, right? So, but there's different kind of options out there, for different kind of applications, from really low-end environments to home gateways, like on this environment. And we have done a lot of work with home gateway vendors, where we even have Wi-Fi connectivity in there, so you can distribute the TV signal through your house, right? It's basically your hub. You can always think of that like your setup box from a cable provider. Did I say that? From a cable provider, and you then feed that information through your house from there. So that's that environment. What's nice about those as well? Some of them, all of them have Ethernet ports, but some of them have LTE connectivity as well. So you can provide that as an option as well. If you have a certain school district which doesn't have any connectivity or Ethernet to the houses, right? You can put an LTE chip in there, a cord in there, and provide that as a service to get feedback from the kids in the school district. Again, this is just a list, and again, you're going to get that slide deck. There's many options out there, and the many options for different kind of applications. For example, we have an enterprise media hub, which is, let's call it a big boy or something like that, which we actually have started to deploy into prisons where they have multiple users, several users accessing that device at the same time. So it's a bigger box, not just a single set-top box. And again, this list is growing. So we have we're working with VBox. VBox came up this morning as well. So we're working with VBox. is an Israeli company which does set-top boxes as well. Then we're working with Scandinavia. If you think about it, Media at Hand, they have a really nice dongle actually, which we're starting to deploy in Puerto Rico. Really nice option. So what the point here is, don't be afraid and say, okay, there's not that many TVs out, or people don't buy that many TVs. There's other options out there, right? So you can refer customers to set up boxes, these kind of things, as an option. Should I really go into the product pitch? Not really. Hang on, my timer goes off here. This is just in a high level perspective. So I think the point on a data casting engine environment is make sure that data casting engine is somewhat related to the route encoder or MMT encoding function, right? Because they need to work really close together. Just like most likely you want to have the broadcast scheduler close to the exciter because they work close together because timing is an issue. So there's certain function in the ecosystem which you want to have close together because they work close together. I think I'm going to skip those things. Actually, what we also can do is the third point on that list, and that came, I think, up as well in previous discussions, is encryption. So there's a function of encryption, and there's a function of signing. And you probably should do both, for certain of your programs. So the signing aspect is so nobody can hack your program and hijack it, right? So that's the signing aspect. And then the the encryption part is, you know, I think Jason mentioned Whitewine, so I think currently it's the only one I know, which is a Google product, which does the encryption around the ATC3 infrastructure, which does the encryption for that, and it's been tested in a couple of markets. I would have to go with talk to Tom, who actually is doing some of those testings, but he probably knows. But you know, don't forget, you can also do these kind of things around your data casting environment, and you might actually have to. So for example, if you're catering to the first responders, they want to know how you encrypt it, right? So most likely, they don't want to have that in the open environment. And we have I'm gonna have a bunch of samples at the end of the presentations where we have done some of these applications, and we can talk about what they have done. And there they are. So that's actually So let's go into a couple of applications we have done. And again, that list is growing. I took a couple notes on my phone here, what I wanted to talk as well without slides. So what we have done here is an emergency alerting function together with NAB. So Sam Matheny was here yesterday, and you know, we have done some emergency alerting implementations with them. They contracted us to implement that for them. So all the kind of the green stuff we kind of developed for NAB pilot. For them to use. And as a matter of fact, I think if you're an NAB member, you can call Sam or somebody at NAB, and you probably get the source code for that, so if you're interested. So, but you have to be an NAB member, I believe. So what that says, that we have created an alert editor and a working client. Then obviously we had to implement some APIs into our transport encoder. And then of course the receiver needs to understand that as well. So kind of that green box shows you where we have done some work around that emergency alerting architecture. And the way it looked like for at demos is, I think this is Santa Barbara, is it? Yes. So there was several years back that when we did this, there was a lot of wildfires in Santa Barbara. So they had these diagrams and pictures made for that as well. The point here is when you watch TV today, right, you get an alert bar on the bottom and say, hey, you know, there's wildfire in your area or something like that, and that's pretty much it. What's really nice about ATSC 3.0, you can make that interactive, and that, I think there was a question this morning as well, was, you know, what's in it for the end user or the consumer, right? So now I can look at my TV and basically click on that alert and then get information like this picture and say, okay, these are the risk areas. Okay, I'm not in it, I'm in it. These kind of things. Or, you know, I think I don't have all the slides, but there's a couple of slides where it even shows evacuation routes, these kind of things. So you as a consumer now have a little bit more targeted information which is pertinent to you versus, you know, just a scroll bar, hey, there's an emergency, be careful. You know, that's not very useful. And then most people, you know, the minute they see that, they switch to their phones and see what's going on, and then, you know, you lost them as a viewer because then they're on their phone. So that's a really nice application we have done for them. And I think the next slide, is kind of the alert author. So that basically is a user interface which you can type in whatever you want, and you can put pictures in whatever you want. It's kind of like a PowerPoint type of thing you can think of. You can type the updates, and it's very easy to use. Again, I think this is a freeware if you're an NAB participant, and you can ask if you can build on that. If you're interested, I can make introductions as well. But so that's one of the applications we have done. And by the way, this can be used by the newsroom, right? It doesn't have to be even you as an engineer. It doesn't even have to be done by you. This can be literally done by the newsroom, right? You're not even involved at that point. You know, during COVID, educational data casting was a big topic, and you know, even before that, we did some applications for WKAR, MSU, in Michigan, for interactive educational data casting. What the kicker here is, we also did this with a companion device, and I didn't really talk much about that. I could have done this on the CP side, but the point here is, maybe it's easier to show on the next slide. I think there you go. So this is Curious Crew. That's their kids educational program, which is kind of cool. They do, you know, it's fascinating to do demos and, you know, they blow stuff up and whatever kids like these days, so make it interesting in regards of science. But what the point here is now you can make that interactive for folks at home. You can basically vote, so I don't have that picture here, but you can vote, and for example, there was a questionnaire, what is a virus? And then you have a multiple choice options available, which you can vote on, and then you can see what, you know, was I right, was I wrong? And then the teachers, for example, know, you know, what's the feedback is. What was interesting about that, have you ever tried to vote or buy anything off a TV with a TV remote? I hope not, because it's almost impossible. So that's where the companion device is coming in. So if you have one of those CPEs at home, right, and Wi-Fi, you can then connect with your phone or tablet to that device, and that's basically in sync with what's in the program. So when that questionnaire, the multiple choice questions come up, you can pull them up on your phone. It's much easier here to vote than going with the remote control. So that's a companion device, and there's actually a standard for that. I forgot what it is, and it must be A something. But there is actually a standard within 3.0 describing that in much detail. So that was another application we have done. And there's a lot of applications in regards of educational data casting these days. And interesting enough, not only in 3.0, there's a lot of one in ATC 1.0, just letting you know, so it's not just in 3.0. Actually, Sam Matheny mentioned that yesterday. That's a project we have done with PBS North Carolina and Device Solutions. It's an emergency paging solution over ATSC 3.0, and he actually had a better picture yesterday with the device, much nicer than me. We had it at NAB, but I don't have one with me, unfortunately. I think that is still an analog system, the paging system they're using in the Carolinas down there. And the problem was there was not much information. It was outdated. The reach was not good. You know, stuff like that. So they built that product. They built that prototype. I think is the right word, where they now can page, you know, the first responders at home on that device. And it's not only you know a page and, you know, call this number or whatever. It actually already has a screen. That's one option where it actually has information about what to do and what the problem is. That's one. Or again, I think there was an option to have for a companion device again, where you get actually the information on your phone if you have the device without the screen. So and that's actually operational right now in a trial mode down in the Carolinas. And again, you know, one of the topics here is encryption, right? It has to be encrypted. Again, Triveni is not an encryption company. We're just a plumber, as I say. We take stuff in, push stuff out. So when they encrypt that, we just take that. We're signaling it's encrypted so that we receive a device. No, oh, it's encrypted. I got to do some work here. So that's another application we have done. This was an interesting one. It's got to be 10, 15 years ago by now. Holy cannoli. It's up in Rochester, WXXY, and that was based on ATSC 1.0, believe it or not. And that was an educational data casting for firehouses. You know, what they wanted to do is they didn't have internet in their firehouses, but they, you know, it's very stationary, so they had antennas on the rooftops, and, you know, ATSC 1 actually worked pretty good. So they wanted to receive educational videos, you know, how to use their hazmat suit and these kind of things, so, which they want to have delivered throughout all their firehouses. And we did this with WXXY over HVSB at that point. There was some customization done as well to make that kind of an emergency communication system as well, meaning if there actually was a widespread emergency, like a large fire or something like that, it actually, I think it was the mayor, could push the red button type of thing, and then it went into live mode, and he could talk about it. And then they also could push information to the hospitals at that point, saying, hey, there's a big fire, I expect so many, you know, burn units, victims type of thing. So it was very interesting over what we did there from an implementation perspective. In Rochester. I think think that's another very old project we have done. This, where I live right now in New Jersey, and PSEG is the power company up there. They wanted to have kind of a digital signage project in all of their facilities where people go pay their bills and stuff like that. So we have done that, and it's been forever implemented. And again, it's Wanda though. So don't forget, there's certain data casting things you can do in ATSC Wanda though, which doesn't need 3.0 if you have the bandwidth. Having said that, reception is a bit questionable sometimes, trust me. And then, actually, I think the next slide, yeah. So this is also a Wanda though, believe it or not. Back before the auto industry went belly up, we actually were contracted by GM to do an infotainment system for GM in the car, and we had kind of a front screen, and we had back screens, these kind of things, all in over 8 VSB. And then we did some driving trials. I think it was Detroit and Atlanta, and they actually really liked it. And what was interesting, the outcome out of that trial was fascinating, because they said, yeah, 8 VSB is really not good for driving with, for mobile devices when you're driving, especially when you're driving fast. What they found out is most of the time the car is actually standing still. It's either on a red light or in the parking lot or at home. So they said, we don't care that much. So it was very interesting. And so they pushed the data, the pre-produced data to that receiver box in the trunk and staged it there and then pushed that out. Obviously, you don't want to do live TV while you're driving in 8 VSB. That does not work well at all, right? But for just data delivery aspect, 8 VSB was just fine and dandy. And I think I actually have another slide of that. And I normally say when I see this, again, this has been a long time ago, I normally say the 80s are calling, they want their user interface back. So it's obviously dated. It's a very old user interface. Again, it's like 15 years old by now. But what that shows you, we had maps, we had interactivity in that already, kind of, again, was all staged, because the data is pushed to the receiver, stored in the receiver, and then that receiver presents it on the screen. But what we did, where we ended up stopping the project, is when we started doing quote-unquote ads in that environment, which means, I think you have a Burger King's sample down there. Come to Burger. I can't read it. I hope you can read it. There's a Burger King 1 mile ahead of you. Come in and you get $1 off. These are the things you can do. And the reason why I kind of try to show you these old projects we have been involved in, because that gives you some ideas what you actually can really can do with 3.0, because it's much more flexible, right? Because it's all IP based. I don't have to worry about MPEG transport streams anymore. It's all on the IP front, and Custom is much better in regards to reception. So, while it works in 8 VSB, it's going to be even better with ATSC 3.0. And I think that's about it I had. What else? There was two notes I took as well. So there's some projects we're doing in regards to radio transmission, where we insert basically radio, and you can listen to radio in ATSC 3.0. That's an application you can do. And then the newest two, we have two partners which are very interested in sports betting. Seems to be a big business, I guess. But they want to do insert data into the transport environment for ATSC 3.0 and send updates to receivers, in quote unquote real time. In regards of sports updates and stuff like that, it's very interesting projects there. So, the reason why I'm kind of bringing these samples up is, I think one of the main topic of my talk is, what are the revenue possibilities, and I want to give you guys ideas on what to do. And the beauty about ATSC 3.0 is, I think your imagination is literally the limit. Whatever you want to do and can think of, you can do. For example, if you're a PBS station, we talked about that also a very long time ago, you could do a pledge app, right? You deliver a pledge app, if you pledge money, you get, premium content, right? Which, these kind of things. Again, your imagination is, you can go anywhere with that however you like. Any questions? Must be lunchtime, huh? Everybody fell asleep. Holy cow. Or I'm really boring. Could also be.
Not at all. I'll fire off a couple here. And open invitation. Call me old-fashioned if you want. But when I've seen some of the examples of apps, a couple in particular in Sam's presentation, I had this mental throwback to web TV in the 1990s. And it seems like we're creating another opportunity to push viewers away from our main signal. You did address that a little bit. Thank you for that. But is there, you know, what keeps them engaged in our broadcast?
Yeah. Again, there's many ways to do that. So I think the way I see that play out from my, it's not a try of any viewer or whatever, it's my personal view. What I would like to see as an end user or as a viewer is I get the broadcast application, right, from, you know, from Sinclair or whoever, right? I get that broadcast application, I watch TV, and then via that broadcast application, I say, okay, there was a newscast about something, you know, I don't know, a fire or police shooting or something like that. I would like to see more information about that. At that point, you know, I click on that information button, which then gets me to more information so I can educate myself or read more up or these kind of things. And there's discussions about, you know, integrating, you know, these kind of broadcast applications environments with their print environment. Right, so you can do some research thereafter. So you don't really lose the viewer. It's just a different engagement in that environment. So they don't really leave you, right? And then in the broadcast application, again, depends what kind of station you are. You can do L bars and still advertise there. So you can do really targeted advertising, or, you know, speaking of targeted advertising, I watch a Ford ad, right? So you get you as a broadcaster at that point can sell to the local Ford dealership that ad, right? And say, hey, while we're doing the nationwide Ford ad, you can buy this local ad, and you click on it and you get to the local ad Ford dealership. So there's a lot of interactivity, I think, which I believe will keep or make the viewer and user much more engaged.
Okay. And the other thing that concerns me is my probable undiagnosed ADD, squirrel, that the distracted driver, if we're presenting all of this information on the screen, you know, what's the impact there, and are there any other safety concerns about that, or is it just me?
I have this safety concern every day when I talk to my children, but that's a different discussion over a couple cocktails. I don't know how they drive and whatever, so I'm not even sure if I want to know. But for example, that application we have done for GM, there was on purpose no video in the front seat. So you couldn't watch a movie or anything like that because I'm watching this movie here, right? So on purpose, the content has to be very limited in regards of, you know, where you are within a vehicle, right? You don't want to you really don't want to watch a movie up front. And even then, you know, even today, you see when I drive my car, I can't change my directions on my map while I'm not in park, right? These kind of things can be all implemented. So, you know, at least from a Triveni perspective or from our perspective, I don't think we can do much about that. We have to actually rely a little bit on the government to tell us what should we do and what should we not do, right? But I think there probably are, you know, discussions to be have, you know, where are we watching what? And how much distracting will it be?
I'm feeling lonely here. Come on. Yeah, thanks, Vicky.
Ralph, what is the largest possible file that could be data cast?
Oh, jeez. Jason? Help me, brother. I mean, you can have large files, right? I have a feeling the larger the file you deliver, the larger the FEC implied you have to have, and then you lose bandwidth. So I think we have done several megs already easily. It all depends how much FEC you want to apply and how much storage you have is also a topic, right? So the TV might not actually have even the storage available. So, you know, versus a set-top box where you have private data, that's a different story, right? So you can have, you know, we partner with most devices which have 128 gig or something like that. So it's pretty nice storage, but you can also break these files down into pieces and then put them back together at the receiver end, right? So I wouldn't recommend, you know, find the biggest file you can and push it down. So, I mean, again, you can. And I don't have an empirical data answer for you what that file size will be. Oh, Jason, you have an answer?
So 2 to the 48 is with the extended TOL length. And that is approximately what? Megabytes. It's 281 terabytes, is that correct? Megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes. Yeah, 281 terabytes with the 2 to the 48 EXT TOL extension.
Did he say terabytes?
248 terabytes, or in other words, really big.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that big enough? And I have a feeling you don't want to do that, actually.
48?
It's probably transmitting 281.
Right now. Well, all right, this just in, 281 terabytes.
There you go.
Do I hear 282? No? We'll stick with 281.
And, there you go. And by the way, just, you know, if you'd like to learn more about ATSC 3.0, don't call me, right? Call Jason, no kidding. Don't call me. But on our website, we have really cool webinars, which you can watch at any time. And there are, you know, some of them are product related, but some of them are so generic about ATSC technology, interactivity, these kind of things. Go to our website, watch the videos at your leisure, you know, if you want to educate yourself. And then if you have questions, you know, give me a buzz. This one?
The actual, where you can type in the messages that you want to send and whatnot.
This one?
Quick question, bottom right corner. How did Brad make out after the asteroid hit his house?
I don't know. I can't read it. You got that right. I got to read this now. I can't see. I'm too old.
Sharp eyes, Mike.
That's funny. Thank you. Best question ever.
Thank you, Ralph.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.